we turn in our study of the Holy War to this passage, and I pulled out the title for the lecture from this thought, Letters from Hell. Bunyan picks up where we left off. I believe the correct place is a paragraph that says, "These things, being thus far agreed upon by them, they wrote another letter to Diabolus and sent it by the hand of Mr. Profane, the contents of which were these." Is that the right place? Am I in the right place? I thought I was. Okay. "The lords of looseness send to the great and high Diabolus from our dens, caves, holes, and strongholds in and about the walls of the town of Mansoul greeting." Remember, we talked this morning about our enemies lurking in the dens and the caves and the holes under the walls of the city, of our hearts. Now he says, in the letter to Diabolus, he says, "Our great Lord and the nourisher of our lives, Diabolus, how glad we were when we heard of your fatherhood's readiness to comply with us and help forward our design in our attempts to ruin man's soul. None can tell but those who, as we do, set themselves against all appearance of good when and wheresoever we find it. Touching the encouragement that your greatness is pleased to give to us to continue to devise, contrive, and study the utter desolation of man's soul, that we are not solicitous," that means careful, thoughtful, anxious. We're not anxious, we're not careful, we're not solicitous about contrive a study of the utter desolation of man's soul, that we are not solicitous about. For we know right well that it cannot but be pleasing and profitable to us to see our enemies and them that seek our lives die at our feet or fly before us. We therefore are still contriving, and that to the best of our cunning, to make this work most facile and easy to your lordship and to us." That is facile. That's an old English word that means easily performed, to be able to perform something easily. So they are still contriving, they say, contriving, and to see by the best of their cunning to make this work easily performed and easy to your lordship and to us. First, we consider of that most hellish, cunning, compacted, threefold project that by you was propounded to us in your last, and have concluded that though to blow them up with the gunpowder of pride would do well, and to do it by tempting them to loose and vile a vein would help on, yet to contrive to bring them into the gulf of desperation, we think, will do best of all. Now, we mentioned it before, it's not difficult for us, in hindsight, to understand why Bunyan would have lighted on this particular plan. In his writing, he makes these fiends of hell, in their discussion of the three, what he calls hellish, cunning, compacted, threefold project. Out of the threefold proposals, it is not hard for us to understand how Bunyan caused these devils to light on this one. Because he, of all people, had struggled most under this particular affliction. Now we, who are at your beck, have thought of two ways to do this. Now these are two ways to do that one choice out of the three choices. The one choice is chosen, and that is to drive them to desperation. Now he's going to suggest two ways to do this, all right? First, we, for our parts, will make them as vile as we can. And then you with us, at a time appointed, shall be ready to fall upon them with the utmost force. And of all the nations that are at your whistle, we think that an army of doubters may be the most likely to attack and overcome the town of Mansoul. So, the theory is, the plan is, we're going to make Mansoul as vile as we can. Get them well and truly into the hands of sin. And then they'll be subject to the work of doubters, right? We all know this by experience, do we not? You find yourself afar from the Lord. And the next thing you know, you are allowing yourself things you know He is not pleased with. And then the next thing you know, if you are stirred for some reason to any measure of self-examination, you readily acknowledge that you have every reason to doubt that you were ever cleansed. Because look at how you're living. So this plan that Bunyan lays out here is a plan that has worked multitudinous times over in the lives of God's people. Murder said this scheme is contrived with the consummate skill. First, let the Christian be drawn into a light, vain, worldly walk, make him as vile as you can. And then assault him with doubts and fears about his salvation. Murder says this plan too often succeeds. And it does. We've all experienced it, I'm quite sure. Some of us more often than we would like to admit. It's a terrible plan. Terrible because it's terribly effective. They go on. Thus shall we overcome these enemies, else the pit shall open her mouth upon them, and desperation shall thrust them down into it. We have also to effect this so much by us desired plan. He calls it a so much by us desired design. We have also to effect this so much by us desired design, sent already three of our trusty Diabolians among them. They are disguised in garb. They have changed their names and are now accepted of them, namely, covetousness, lasciviousness, and anger. The name of covetousness was changed to prudent thrift. And him, Mr. Mind, has hired. And is almost become as bad as our friend. Oh, my Lord. I wrote in the margin of my book, oh, Lord, help us. Excuse me. I mean, once covetousness was taken in by Mr. Mind, Bunyan says Mr. Mind has become almost as bad as Mr. Covetousness. Lasciviousness has changed his name to Harmless Myrrh, and he has got to be the Lord Will Be Will's lackey. But he has made his master very wanton. Anger changed his name to good zeal and was entertained by godly fear. But the peevish old gentleman took pepper in his nose and turned our companion out of his house. Godly fear is not going to entertain anger under any name. Nay, he has informed us since that he ran away from him, or else his old master had hanged him up for his labors. Now these have helped forward our work and design upon man's soul, for notwithstanding the spite and quarrelsome temper of the old gentleman last mentioned, the other two ply their business well, and are likely to ripen the work apace. Our next project is that it be concluded that you come upon the town upon a market day. Remember, we talked a lot about that. Talked a lot about the significance of that market day for the devil's attack. That you would come among us upon a market day, and that when they are upon the heat of their business, for then to be sure they will be most secure and least think that an assault will be made upon them. They will also, at such a time, be less able to defend themselves and to offend you in the prosecution of our design. And we, your trusty, and we are sure your beloved ones, shall, when you shall make your furious assault without, be ready to second the business within. So shall we, in all likelihood, be able to put man's soul to utter confusion and to swallow them up before they can come to themselves. If your serpentine heads, most subtle dragons, and our highly esteemed lords can find out a better way than this, let us quickly know your minds. And then he signs off to the monsters of the infernal cave from the house of Mr. Mischief in Man's Soul by the hand of Mr. Profane. There is, by the way, although it's not talked about in the text, what we've read this morning, this afternoon, but the woodcut in our book, opposite page 233, is a very, just a beautiful, accurate visual of the condition of man's soul at this time. It's in terrible condition. And that picture just is an excellent artistic representation of how absolutely sick and desperate this town was at this time. This is man's soul. Now, don't forget the bigger picture here. Let's not forget what we're looking at. Let's don't get so deep in the trees we can't see the forest. What we're looking at is the goings-on inside the soul when Prince Emmanuel has left it. He's left it to itself. Because of what? Anybody remember? Why did he leave? Why did he leave? Carnal security. Carnal security. It became comfortable. Comfortable in their condition. Thought that they were safe. And everything's lovely. So they just started partying, drinking, and sitting down at the table with playing games with carnal security. And they stopped. Not only did they stop coming and visiting with Prince Emmanuel, he stopped bringing those daily gifts he was bringing. In fact, he stopped coming at all, and they didn't even notice it. How many times have you been there? He stopped coming bringing those little handfuls of purpose, and you stopped going to him for them. And after a while, you stopped even noticing that he wasn't coming. And then he left. And that's where they are. That's the bigger picture. Now Bunyan takes up his writing. That was the letter to hell. I'm sorry, John, the title needs to be Letters to Hell. From Hell. It should be to Hell on the title, I mean. Bunyan goes on. Now, all the while that the raging runagates and hellish diabolians were thus contriving the ruin of the town of Mansoul, they, namely the poor town itself, were in a sad and woeful case. Partly because they had so grievously offended Shaddai and his son, and partly because that the enemies thereby got strength within them afresh, and also because, though they had by many petitions made suit to the Prince Emmanuel and to his father Shaddai by him for their pardon and favor, yet hitherto obtained they not one smile, but contrariwise, through the craft and subtlety of the domestic diabolians, their cloud was made to grow blacker and blacker, and their Emmanuel to stand at a further distance. Things are getting worse in Mansoul, and quick. Again, I share with you Berger's comment. Berger said, backsliding from God naturally produces clouds that grow blacker and blacker. Corruptions grow stronger and stronger, while grace in the soul becomes sick and weakly. This is the misery of the case. Backsliding souls lack heart to consider their own state. This shows the great importance of vigilance and self-examination. On the preceding page or page back, our commentator, and I wanted to remind you, I read these commentators from our book because many who receive these by way of sermon audio don't have the book that we have. And because they don't have it, they don't have access to these notes. So I read them, and I hope that you don't find them tedious. There's a great deal of instruction in these notes. Our commentator says, a second letter now addresses to Diabolus, reports progress, and communicates the choice of the measures for the retaking of the soul. The carnal nature in man ever acts in concert with its master, Satan. And although Satan leaves the erring soul very much to his own devices, still the carnal mind is his nature in man. The carnal mind is Satan's nature in man. And it does his bidding and ever seeks instruction at his mouth. The plot now thickens. Partial success has already attended past efforts. The downfall of the soul is too truly answering to the designs of Satan. The mind has been induced to take into its service the evil principle of covetousness. And ere long, the servant rules the master. The will has given way to worldly mirth and has been led on to degradation far deeper than that word of itself implies, and finds himself at last a slave of lust, given over to wantonness and presumptuous sin. Let me just pause in the reading there for a second and give you one example of how deeply this can happen. David, who would ever have thought that David would set up one of his most faithful generals to be killed? Who would ever have thought he would take that man's wife to himself and commit murder to cover it up? Once the heart starts to slip, only God's grace can recover it, and there is no length to which it will not go. Adultery, murder, all these things David did. Our commentator says, and finds himself at last a slave of lust, given over. Now, can that happen? Can that be the description of a true saint? It sure can. It sure can. Not permanently. Our doctrine of perseverance. Not permanently. David didn't stay in that case. But he was there. All this is the ripening of the plot, and as it ripens, it is more and more helpful to the designs of the evil nature. It is, in fact, the story of the flatterer. You remember the flatterer? Told over again, as in the Pilgrim's Progress. The flatterer. You remember that gentleman? Our author quotes him and says, Bunyan said, a man black of flesh but covered with a very light robe. But he beckoned them away from the path of safety by the scarcely perceptive divergence of the road of danger, and at last enclosed them in his net. He emphasized, you notice in your book, he puts emphasis on the words scarcely perceptible divergence at first. And now that they have discovered their mistake, they are reminded of the advice given them to beware of the flatterer, and could then but give answer, yes, but we did not imagine that this fine-spoken man was he. Well, that's the point, isn't it? Commentator goes on to say, the secret conclave next takes counsel respecting the suggestions of Satan as to the best way to take the soul. The choice ultimately was to employ the weapon of doubt and desperation as being the best calculated to succeed in the present case. We think that an army of doubters may be most likely to attack and overcome the town of man's soul, so said the Diabolians. This opens up the sequel of the Holy War in its concluding concluding stages. Decline of faith and love is followed by soul sickness. Lack of watchfulness has exposed the soul to evil thoughts and evil deeds. These have gradually been gaining the mastery and leading the soul into captivity. Meanwhile, the unconcern of the man blinds his eyes to the outward progress of the evil nature. The scheme is still a secret conspiracy, not yet fully disclosed to the better nature. And now it is to the interest of Satan to reduce the soul to a state of sin, so that when it awakes to the reality of its condition, it may be seized with a spirit of despair and resign all hope of renewal of pardon and acceptance. For this, as I said, this is so often a success story in our souls. Far too often. Bunyan picks back up. The sickness also did still greatly rage in man's soul, both among the captains and the inhabitants of the town, and their enemies only were now lively and strong, and likely to become the head, whilst man's soul is likely to become the tail. A sad and woeful case, is how he describes it. The commentator says all the symptoms show a rapid decline of the once joy, and tomes showed a rapid decline of the once joy and sunshine of the soul, a far gone decay of its former strength and vigor, and the near setting of the light of its glory. The soul is gradually becoming more and more conscious of its vilest degradation, more and more hopeless as to the return of its departed Lord or the renewal of his favor. The once strong man has slept a deep, unhallowed sleep, and now he awakes to find the power of the Philistines upon him, and himself a helpless victim in their hands. You know, this whole thing about despondency, giving up. Have you ever reached a place, and this is exactly what Bunyan's describing, have you ever reached a place in your soul where even while you were praying, you come to the Lord and you make your mind up, I'm done with this, I'm going to quit this, I'm not going to do this, I can't do this anymore, I've got to return to the Lord. And you go to the Lord, and even while you're praying, your conscience and your enemy are saying in your ears, you're wasting your time. You're not going to succeed. You're wasting your time. He isn't listening. He knows you're not going to. And he's not believing you. Don't bother. Don't waste your time. He's not hearing and he's not listening because you're not going to do it. That is despair. That is utter disparity. Despair. You've reached a place you don't even believe God hears your praying anymore. That's a desperate place to be. It's a place of where you forsake all hope. And only His kind grace can deliver you once you've gone that far. You didn't get there in one day. You didn't get there in one act. You got there from a progression of entertaining more and more that which He forbid. And it's dangerous. The commentator said, what was His past glory then? What is His past glory then but condemnation? What? That He had once rent a lion by the way as He would have rent a kid? What? That He had upheaved the preponderous gates of Gaza, bar and all, and carried them to the hilltop? What? that when the Philistines shouted against him at the rock of Edom, the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the cords upon his arms became as flax that's burned with fire, and with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jaw of an ass, he had slain 1,000 men. What? All of this? What, all of this? You think all of this is going to be a comfort to him now? By trifling with the gift of his great strength, by abusing the grace given to him, by taking fire into his bosom, by indulging the spirit of carnal security, he smarted for his sin and was bereaved of his strength and liberty and light and joy and peace in one day. Did you get that? I underline those words in my book. In one day. All of that, all this listing of these great exploits from the Lord that he has accomplished, all of that is washed away one day. One day. And so what are all the past experiences of the soul? The blessed memories of better days, the feasts and the visits of Emmanuel, the tokens of his love, the badges of his favor, the presents from his table. What are they but the greater cause for writing Ichabod on her dismantled walls? The glory is departing. Beware the Israelite of old who tore the lion in his path when poor and blind. He saw the blessed light of heaven no more, shorn of his noble strength, forced to grind. In prison and at last led forth to be a pander to Philistine revelry. And one day. Oh, I would that my own heart would learn how dangerous a thing it is to trifle with sin. Even just to trifle with sin. I want to read to you. I won't do it today. We'll stop today. But I want to read to you when we come back something that Bunyan wrote at another time in another place about this condition, this situation that man's soul finds itself in here. I think I can safely say we've all been there. I don't know. Maybe you haven't. You're new enough in the faith. But those of us that have walked this way a while, we know it too painfully well. I grieve to say it's old and familiar ground. But I warn you, if you're younger in the faith, don't go there. Don't go there. When he says it got blacker and blacker, there's just no way to describe the blackness when you go there. Don't go there. Keep the Lord ever before your mind, ever before your heart. Protect and guard your communion with him. Don't let it fall aside. Because I promise you, your sky is going to get darker and darker and blacker until one day you will abandon hope that you even have a possibility of salvation. That's a dark place to be.